Chapter 2. That, generally speaking, you are seldom or never fixed, but always at the mercy of every newcomer, to divulge your family affairs, to inspect your private life, and treasure up the sayings of yourself and friends. A very great confinement, and much complained of in most families. Thus have these wenches, by their continual plotting and cabals, united themselves into a formidable body, and got the whip hand of their betters. They make their own terms with us, and two servants now will scarce undertake the work which one might perform with ease, notwithstanding which, they have raised their wages to a most exorbitant pitch. And, I doubt not, if there be not a stop put to their career, but they will bring wages up to 201 per annum in time, for they are much about halfway already. It is by these means they run away with a great part of our money, which might be better employed in trade, and what is worse, by their insolent behavior, their pride in dress, and their exorbitant wages, they give birth to the following inconveniences. First, they set an ill example to our children, our apprentices, our covenant servants, and other dependents, by their saucy and insolent behavior, their pert, and sometimes abusive answers, their daring defiance of correction, and many other insolences which youth are but too apt to imitate. Secondly, by their extravagance in dress, they put our wives and daughters upon yet greater excesses, because they will, as indeed they ought, go finer than the maid. Thus the maid striving to outdo the mistress, the tradesman's wife to outdo the gentleman's wife emulating the lady, and the ladies one another, it seems as if the whole business of the female sex were nothing but an excess of pride, and extravagance in dress. Thirdly, the great height to which women servants have brought their wages, makes a mutiny among the men servants, and puts them upon raising their wages too, so that in a little time our servants will become our partners, nay, probably, run away with the better part of our profits, and make servants of us vice versa. But yet with all these inconveniences, we cannot possibly do without these creatures. Let us therefore cease to talk of the abuses arising from them, and begin to think of redressing them. I do not set up for a lawgiver, and therefore shall lay down no certain rules, humbly submitting in all things to the wisdom of our legislature. What I offer shall be under correction, and upon conjecture, my utmost ambition being but to give some hints, to remedy this growing evil, and leave the prosecution to abler hands. And first it would be necessary to settle, and limit their wages, from 40 and 50 shillings to 4 and 5 pounds per annum, that is to say, according to their merits and capacities. For example, a young unexperienced servant should have 40 shillings per annum, till she qualifies herself for a larger sum. A servant who can do all household work, or, as the good women term it, can take her work and leave her work, should have 4 pounds per annum, and those who have lived 7 years in one service, should ever after demand 5 pounds per annum, for I would very fain have some particular encouragements and privileges given to such servants who should continue long in a place. It would incite a desire to please, and cause an emulation very beneficial to the public. I have heard of an ancient charity in the parish of St. Clement Staines, where a sum of money, or estate, is left, out of the interest or income of which such maid servants, who have lived in that parish 7 years in one service, receive a reward of £10 apiece, if they please to demand it. This is a noble benefaction, and shows the public spirit of the donor, but everybody's business is nobody's, nor have I heard that such reward has been paid to any servant of late years. 1,000 pities a gift of that nature should sink into oblivion, and not be kept up as an example, to incite all parishes to do the like. The Romans had a law called Justitiam Liberarum, by which every man who had been a father of 3 children, had particular honors and privileges. This incited the youth to quit a dissolute single life, and become fathers of families, to the support and glory of the empire. In imitation of this most excellent law, I would have such servants, who should continue many years in one service, meet with singular esteem and reward. The apparel of our women servants should be next regulated, that we may know the mistress from the maid. I remember I was once put very much to the blush, being at a friend's house, and by him required to salute the ladies. I kissed the chamber jade into the bargain, for she was as well dressed as the best. But I was soon undeceived by a general titter, which gave me the utmost confusion. Nor can I believe myself the only person who has made such a mistake. Things of this nature would be easily avoided, if servant maids were to wear liveries, as our footmen do, or obliged to go in a dress suitable to their station. What should ail them, but a jacket and petticoat of good yard white stuff, or calamanco, might keep them decent and warm. Our charity children are distinguished by their dress. Why then may not our women servants, why may they not be made frugal perforce, and not suffered to put all on their backs, but obliged to save something against a rainy day? I am, therefore, entirely against servants' wearing of silks, laces, and other superfluous finery. It sets them above themselves, and makes their mistresses contemptible in their eyes. I am handsomer than my mistress, says a young prinked-up baggage. What pity it is I should be her servant. I go as well dressed, or better than she. This makes the girl take the first offer to be made a whore, and there is a good servant spoiled. Whereas, were her dress suitable to her condition, it would teach her humility, and put her in mind of her duty. Besides, the fear of spoiling their clothes makes them afraid of household work, so that in a little time we shall have none but chambermaids and nursery maids. And of this let me give one instance. My family is composed of myself and sister, a man and a maid, and, being without the last, a young wench came to hire herself. The man was gone out, and my sister above stairs, so I opened the door myself, and this person presented herself to my view, dressed completely, more like a visitor than a servant maid. She, not knowing me, asked for my sister. Pray, madam, said I, be pleased to walk into the parlor, she shall wait on you presently. Accordingly I handed madam in, who took it very cordially. After some apology, I left her alone for a minute or two, while I, stupid wretch, ran up to my sister, and told her there was a gentlewoman below come to visit her. Dear brother, said she, don't leave her alone, go down and entertain her, while I dress myself. Accordingly, down I went, and talked of indifferent affairs. Meanwhile my sister dressed herself all over again, not being willing to be seen in an undress. At last she came down dressed as clean as her visitor, but how great was my surprise, when I found my fine lady a common servant wench. My sister, understanding what she was, began to inquire what wages she expected. She modestly asked, but £8 a year. The next question was, what work she could do to deserve such wages. To which she answered, she could clean a house, or dress a common family dinner. But cannot you wash, replied my sister, or get up linen? She answered in the negative, and said, she would undertake neither, nor would she go into a family that did not put out their linen to wash, and hire a charwoman to scour. She desired to see the house, and having carefully surveyed it, said, the work was too hard for her, nor could she undertake it. This put my sister beyond all patience, and me into the greatest admiration. Young woman, said she, you have made a mistake. I want a housemaid, and you are a chambermaid. No, madam, replied she, I am not needlewoman enough for that. And yet you ask £8 a year, replied my sister. Yes, madam, said she, nor shall I bate a farthing. Then get you gone for a lazy impudent baggage, said I. You want to be a boarder, not a servant. Have you a fortune or estate, that you dress at that rate? No, sir, said she, but I hope I may wear what I work for without offense. What the work? Interrupted my sister. Why, you do not seem willing to undertake any work. You will not wash nor scour. You cannot dress a dinner for company. You are no needlewoman. And our little house of two rooms on a floor is too much for you. For God's sake, what can you do? Madam, replied she pertly, I know my business, and do not fear a service. There are more places than parish churches. If you wash at home, you should have a laundry maid. If you give entertainments, you must have a cook maid. If you have any needlework, you should have a chambermaid. And such a house as this is enough for a housemaid in all conscience. I was pleased at the wit, and astonished at the impudence of the girl, so dismissed her with thanks for her instructions, assuring her that when I kept four maids she should be housemaid if she pleased. Were a servant to do my business with cheerfulness, I should not grudge at £5 or £6 per annum, nor would I be so unchristian to put more upon any one than they can bear, but to pray, and pay too is the devil. It is very hard, that I must keep four servants or none. In great families, indeed, where many servants are required, those distinctions of chambermaid, housemaid, cookmaid, laundrymaid, nurserymaid, and see are requisite, to the end, that each may take her particular business, and many hands may make the work light. But for a private gentleman, of a small fortune, to be obliged to keep so many idle jades, when one might do the business, is intolerable, and matter of great grievance. I cannot close this discourse without a gentle admonition and reproof to some of my own sex. I mean those gentlemen who give themselves unnecessary airs, and cannot go to see a friend, but they must kiss and slop the maid. And all this is done with an air of gallantry, and must not be resented. Nay, some gentlemen are so silly, that they shall carry on an underhand affair with their friend's servant maid, to their own disgrace, and the ruin of many a young creature. Nothing is more base and ungenerous, yet nothing more common, and withal so little taken notice of. D.N. me. Jack, says one friend to another, this maid of yours is a pretty girl, you do so and so to her, by G.D. this makes the creature pert, vain, and impudent, and spoils many a good servant. What gentleman will descend to this low way of intrigue, when he shall consider that he has a footboy or an apprentice for his rival, and that he is seldom or never admitted, but when they have been his tasters? And the fool of fortune, though he comes at the latter end of the feast, yet pays the whole reckoning, and so indeed would I have all such silly cullies served. If I must have an intrigue, let it be with a woman, that shall not shame me. I would never go into the kitchen, when the parlor door was open. We are forbidden at Highgate, to kiss the maid, when we may kiss the mistress. Why then will gentlemen descend so low, by too much familiarity with these creatures, to bring themselves into contempt? I have been at places, where the maid has been so dizzied with these idle compliments, that she has mistook one thing for another, and not regarded her mistress in the least, but put on all the flirting airs imaginable. This behavior is nowhere so much complained of as in taverns, coffee houses, and places of public resort, where there are handsome barkeepers, and see these creatures being puffed up with the fulsome flattery of a set of flesh flies, which are continually buzzing about them, carry themselves with the utmost insolence imaginable, insomuch that you must speak to them with a great deal of deference, or you are sure to be affronted. Being at a coffee house the other day, where one of these ladies kept the bar, I had bespoke a dish of rice tea, but madam was so taken up with her sparks, she had quite forgot it. I spake for it again, and with some temper, but was answered after a most taunting manner, not without a toss of the head, a contraction of the nostrils, and other impertinences, too many to enumerate. Seeing myself thus publicly insulted by such an animal, I could not choose but show my resentment. Woman, said I, sternly, I want a dish of rice tea, and not what your vanity and impudence may imagine. Therefore treat me as a gentleman and a customer, and serve me with what I call for. Keep your impertinent repartees and impudent behavior for the coxcombs that swarm round your bar, and make you so vain of your blown carcass. And indeed I believe the insolence of this creature will ruin her master at last, by driving away men of sobriety and business, and making the place a den of vagabonds and rascals. Gentlemen, therefore, ought to be very circumspect in their behavior, and not undervalue themselves to servant wenches, who are but too apt to treat a gentleman ill, whenever he puts himself into their power. Let me now beg pardon for this digression, and return to my subject, by proposing some practicable methods for regulating of servants, which, whether they are followed or not, yet, if they afford matter of improvement and speculation, will answer the height of my expectation, and I will be the first who shall approve of whatever improvements are made from this small beginning. The first abuse I would have reformed is, that servants should be restrained from throwing themselves out of place on every idle vagary. This might be remedied were all contracts between master and servant made before a justice of peace, or other proper officer, and a memorandum thereof taken in writing. Nor should such servant leave his or her place, for men and maids might come under the same regulation, till the time agreed on be expired, unless such servant be misused or denied necessaries, or show some other reasonable cause for their discharge. In that case, the master or mistress should be reprimanded or fined. But if servants misbehave themselves, or leave their places, not being regularly discharged, they ought to be immersed or punished. But all those idle, ridiculous customs, and laws of their own making, as a month's wages, or a month's warning, and such like, should be entirely set aside and abolished. When a servant has served the limited time duly and faithfully, they should be entitled to a certificate, as is practiced at present in the wool combing trade. Nor should any person hire a servant without a certificate or other proper security. A servant without a certificate should be deemed a vagrant, and a master or mistress ought to assign very good reasons indeed when they object against giving a servant his or her certificate. And though, to avoid prolixity, I have not mentioned footmen particularly in the foregoing discourse, yet the complaints alleged against the maids are as well masculine as feminine, and very applicable to our gentlemen's gentlemen. I would, therefore, have them under the very same regulations, and, as they are fellow servants, would not make fish of one and flesh of the other, since daily experience teaches us that never a barrel the better herring. The next great abuse among us is, that under the notion of cleaning our shoes, above 10,000 wicked, idle, pilfering vagrants are permitted to patrol about our city and suburbs. These are called the Black Guard, who black your honor's shoes, and incorporate themselves under the title of the Worshipful Company of Japanners. Were this all, there were no hurt in it, and the whole might terminate in a jest. But the mischief ends not here, they corrupt our youth, especially our men servants. Oaths and impudence are their only flowers of rhetoric. Gaming and thieving are the principal parts of their profession. Japanning but the pretense. For example, a gentleman keeps a servant, who among other things is to clean his master's shoes. But our gentlemen's gentlemen are above it nowadays, and your man's man performs the office, for which piece of service you pay double and treble, especially if you keep a table. Nay, you are well off, if the Japanner has no more than his own diet from it. I have often observed these rascals sneaking from gentlemen's doors with wallets or hats full of good victuals, which they either... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.